Thank you. It is very good to be able to be here with you tonight, and we appreciate so much your help and encouragement that you were able to give us last time we were here. We were here about a year ago, and we certainly enjoyed our visit then, and we certainly look forward to being with you again tonight. The work is continuing to go well, and for that we can be truly grateful, of course. And like I said, we appreciate your help and support that you was to give us. Without your help, of course, we wouldn't be able to do it. And whatever we're able to accomplish is part of your help, and so we're co-partners in whatever we're able to do. We primarily concentrate in India, but of course that is not our only focus. We also go to several other countries during the year. We just got back from Vietnam about two weeks ago, and Vietnam is a communist country. And so Vietnam and India both have one thing in common. To a certain extent, they're walking a tightrope. That is, they're limited in what they're able to do. But even though communism is the main form of government in Vietnam, that doesn't necessarily mean it's anti-religious. As a matter of fact, our translator said this time that about 70% of the people are either a combination of Buddhist or some kind of tribal religion. And only about 20 to 30% of the people are actually atheist. Of course, that's way too many, but nevertheless, it's not as bad as you might think for. Less than 10%, though, were Christians, and most of those are Catholics. So there's some Christians. There are some churches there. They're scattered throughout the country. Most of them are meeting in someone's home there. Vietnam is a different country than what you might think. It's not as primitive, maybe, what you think, whatever you might think it is. But it's a very modern country, a very clean country, if that matter. We enjoy going there. But a lot of the farming is still done by hand. They do raise a lot of rice, of course, and there we find some people working in the rice fields. And they're actually transplanting the rice, moving it from a place where it's real thick to a place where it's not so thick. You can imagine how long that takes to do that when you try to do it by hand. But here's a main city here, Saigon, just outside, from the top floor of our hotel where we stayed at. Just gives you an idea, again, of the very modern city that you're a part of. But everybody there rides motorcycles, and I mean just about literally everybody, men and women, it doesn't matter. This is a house where the church meets, and we had a seminar there for about 4 days, and as you can see, so many motorcycles right in front of the door, you can hardly even get in the door because of the motorcycles there. This is another scene right across the street from where the hotel was. And again, you see all the motorcycles. There are several cars there, but many of the cars are going to be taxis. So again, most of the transportation is done by motorcycle, actually. This is one of the houses that we met when we had a seminar over there with these folks about 4 days. And this is the first time we've actually done this. In the past, we've had to go to a rented house or hotel or something like that, because we as Americans are not really supposed to be meeting with the Vietnam people and teaching them the Bible. However, things is slacked up some. They're a little looser than it used to be. And so the man who has this house said, we're going to try it. We're going to try doing it in my home and just see what happens. And as far as I know, we had no problem whatsoever this time. But the man who owns that's him right there, and that's his wife, the second one there. So I had a good visit there, but like I said, no problems at all, which is good, of course, and it showed that the government is getting a little looser about what they can do. And so hopefully before too long, maybe they'll be a little more free about passing out tracts and literature and things like that. But he makes a lot of trips driving by motorcycle. He's even most 2 or 3 times a year, he'll go all the way up north to Hanoi, which is many hours driving on a motorcycle, visiting different groups and Christians and so forth to encourage them and teaching them so forth. This is the kitchen where the wife cooked the food for about 20 people for about 4 days there. And I'm imagining it got very hot during the day because this is totally enclosed. There's no ventilation whatsoever in that kitchen. It's right in the very center of the house. And so I can imagine it got very hot there. This is about 2 hours, or really more like 4 or 5 hours, outside of the main city. We traveled here to kind of meet some of the Christians here in this area. The church actually meets right in that window right there. And this is in the home of a Christian. Like I said, most of the churches meet in the house of some Christian there. But this is when one group meets. And this is the preacher for that little group. He actually makes a living by, he has two tractors. And you'll notice here that behind the tractor is not a plow or a disc or something, but behind it is a trailer. That's like it is in India. Most of the time behind the tractor, you'll see a trailer pulling dirt. They don't use them out in the fields too much like we would think they would here. This is another preacher here. This is our translator over here. Very smart young man. He's graduated from a school of preaching in Singapore. Knows English very, very well. Actually taught himself English, as a matter of fact. In between us is sitting a preacher. He actually preaches for two congregations. One congregation meets in his home where we're at. Another congregation meets about a good distance away, but he travels there on Sundays by motorcycle to preach for that group as well. And he makes his living, of course, by farming. And so we were able to meet with him and he met with us for about 5 days, actually, in a seminar. This is a man on the left there, became Christian not too long before this picture was made. So he was just converting one beside him, one who mainly did the teaching for him. This is another seminar we had in another place. This is about 2 hours on the other side of Saigon, the Ho Chi Minh City. The man who has this place, he's been a Christian a long, long time. His family was Christian back in the days of the Vietnam War. And he told us a story that back in those days, of course, there was the church going to send some helicopters to rescue the Christians there in Saigon. But before the helicopters arrived, the Health of Saigon fell, and he never was able to get out. Of course, looking back, probably a good thing because he was able to keep the church going and so forth. We heard a similar type story from another Christian. I did not meet him, but his family was Christians as well. And he kept putting other people on the helicopter to get them out before he stayed behind with his family. Of course, they got stuck very finally. He never did get out. After the war ended, he was forced to go up in the mountains and kind of keep the church going up there. But of course, again, it was hard on them, but looking back, it was a good thing as far as the church is concerned. So they had a lot of things suffered along the way after the war ended, but they were really dedicated and they continue to remain very dedicated to the church and to the Lord. This is where they're washing dishes, of course. These three ladies wash the dishes every day, right on the floor. There's no hot water here. It's all cold water, but at least nobody got sick anyway. I'll also go to Africa, usually every year, sometimes a couple of times a year. I'll be going to Ghana, Africa in about 2.5 weeks. I'll be teaching in a school of preaching there, teaching in a master's program. And so Bear Valley has several schools, and as of beginning of 2017, they had 23 schools in 19 different countries. And altogether then, those schools baptized nearly 2,600 people. That's a lot of folks, as you might imagine. And I think it shows that what these schools are doing is one of the best ways to evangelize a nation. They're not training what we might call pulpit preachers, but they're training real evangelists, people who know out, have desire and the knowledge to go out and teach others and bring many souls to Christ rather than just speaking to those who might already be Christians. Of course, India continues to be most of our efforts and emphasis. And so this is Vinay David there in the city of Delhi. Right now, we're currently sponsoring 27 weekly TV programs and 8 radio programs. We are going to have to cancel a couple of those. We don't have the funds to continue all of those, which is bad news, of course. But anyway, we are having to do some of that very soon. But anyway, all of those programs literally bring in hundreds of responses every week. And, of course, all those who complete a Bible correspondence course receives a free Bible. And, of course, that's where literature comes in, because without the literature, there's no way you could follow up on the contacts you're getting from the TV and radio. This is Vinay David here actually grading some of the Bible correspondence courses, answers that they get back through the mail. All of our co-workers also print a monthly magazine. In Delhi here, for instance, they send out 5,000 copies every month, and some of the others send out even more than that. But Paula here is cutting out some of the labels by hand, which she had a few minutes, so she was going to help them out. That's a time-consuming process. But they print them on regular paper. You had to cut them out by hand. Then they glue it on to whatever they're sending there. So it's kind of a slow, time-consuming process getting all that done. But they think that's one of the best ways to have evangelism is the monthly magazine. They all of one that we know of, they really like that monthly magazine. But this shows the long-term effect of evangelism. This is the David family, Sonny David and his brother Francis. These two men were some of the first men that was converted by the Choates when they went to India back in the 1960s. Of course, they've been Christians ever since. Now their children are grown and have their own children. Right beside Francis and Vinay David, his son. This is Sonny's son-in-law. But just imagine, if you can, what this family would be like if the Choates had never went to India many, many years ago. They're obviously, their future is much different now than what would be then, and not only that, but their eternal future is much different. So as we go and convert other people and teach them about Christ, we don't know what we're doing, but we're making some eternal difference in the lives of so many people, and that's exactly what we're trying for, of course. We're also working with a man away on the northeast corner of India, and with Tang Lien, that's him right in the very center there. He translates the Voice of Truth for us into his native language, as well as some other tracts and books. Normally, we would go to his place, and we have before, but this time, he thought it might be safer he came to meet us. He lives in a kind of a violent-prone area anyway, and they were having an election over in his area while we were going to be there. And around election time, you never really know what's going to happen. And so he just thought it'd be better for them to meet us, and had no problems. We're glad to meet him there. But it was good to meet him again. It's been a year or so since we've been able to see him. Of course, we continue. He'd been doing the work anyway, but it was good to see him. We were going to go back to his place this fall, but we're not going to have time to do it. Hopefully next spring we'll be able to get back over there. This is Joshua Goodham with a bunch of Bibles. That's about 3,000 Bibles you see there in the picture. As we said before, everyone who completes a Bible correspondence course receives a free Bible. And so this is always one of the great needs we have, is money to buy more Bibles with. Joshua Goodham prints more Bibles than anyone I know of. Every month he'll send out nearly 1,000 Bibles. And so those Bibles will only last him 3 or 4 months. And he'll have to have some more then very soon. We're also working with a man way down in the south part of India with P.K. Verghese. His area has a very large Catholic population. And so this is one of the Catholic churches in his area. That church is about 400 years old. Very kept up, nice, as you can see. This is the inside. You kind of tell something about the age of it by looking to the inside, but still a very beautiful building there. But this is P.K. Verghese right over here on the right-hand side. As you can see, he's not a young man, as we might say. He's getting to the age where generally people kind of start thinking about maybe slowing down a little bit, kind of taking it easy, you know. Well, he's not doing that at all. He was living about 4 or 5 hours from where he's at now. He'd been living there for about 25 years or so. But he just moved his place. This couple right beside him were Christians. They were driving about 30 minutes to meet with a church somewhere else. They had a very nice building right behind their house for the church to meet in. And so P.K. moved up here, began working with them, started a new church there. He's also starting a school of preaching, him and about 2 or 3 other men in that area. And so you might say, instead of taking life easy, he's starting all over again. And we really admire him to doing that at an age when most people are not thinking about starting over, for sure. But this is a picture of the church there. When this picture made, the church been meeting about 6 months. As you can see, a very nice building there. 3 or 4 of those are Christians. They were meeting there from another congregation, but they drive about 45 minutes there, just kind of help encourage them out a little bit. But anyway, got a good start, as you can see there. Literature is always a big part of our work, and most of that work as literature is sent by containers, both coming and going. We ship the Voice of Truth. We print it in India, and so it's shipped back here on containers. We also ship a lot of literature overseas. It may be Voice of Truth. It might be Bible class literature that we pick up from congregations. It might be other literature and so forth. Some of you might be noticing a trailer back there in the parking lot. That is our trailer. We're on the way to Texas. We'll be driving to Dallas tomorrow. And, of course, then we'll be unloading a lot of that trailer full of books which is about nearly 1,600 pounds of literature to mission printing. They're sending a container very shortly to Nigeria, and so all that will go on that container to Nigeria. We also sent some on other containers, other places at various times. So this is always the best way to send literature overseas, because postage is just so expensive, you can hardly do it any other way other than by containers. And so we try to, whenever we find a container going somewhere, we try to put a lot of literature on it. And so that's one thing we're doing here. So this is kind of a roundabout way, but it's a little closer than going straight from home, I guess, by coming by here anyway. But India has a big ports, has many ports, and there's one port here just before sunset. Makes a pretty picture there. We also have a lot of work going on with the blind people. In India, there's about 15 million blind people, and that's what your funds was primarily used for last year that you give us. It's working very well. Philemon has his components, blind work, basically consists of two components. There's both a malevolent component as well as a strong evangelistic component. Blind people there are generally very poor, as you might expect. There's very few government programs to help people out. And so if you have a difficult time working, which obviously blind people do, then you're going to generally be very poor. And so he has two or three blind meetings every month in various places. They will have a meeting with them, preach the gospel to them, and then after that give us some literature. He also passes out a lot of the MP3 players, which is those in those boxes there. They are totally enclosed MP3 players where the blind people can listen to the Bible being read in their own language. And so obviously that's a great deal for them, because there is such a thing as a Braille Bible, but it's very, very expensive as well as very, very big. So you can't carry it and do anything with it. So obviously the only practical way for them to read the Bible is by listening to it by that. And it works out very, very well. But like I said, they have two or three blind meetings every month. At the end of the meeting, they will distribute the Braille literature. They have the Seeker's Bible course as well as the Voice of Truth in Braille. And we just sent some money over there to buy a Braille printer for them. Most of that money was given to us by a church in Jonesboro, Arkansas, and that will enable them to print a lot more Braille literature. And the postage for Braille literature is free there in India. That's part of the government benefit they have for blinds. And so obviously then that will allow them to distribute this literature pretty much all over India without too much cost. And so that should be a great deal for them. And so we're looking forward to kind of helping get that going. So we just sent it. Hopefully they'll get the printer for too long and get it all going and everything. But these are two blind preachers. And we really admire their courage and dedication. As you might expect, it's difficult for blind people to travel. But these two will travel a great deal, because wherever the blind meeting is held, they will travel two or three days in advance to kind of help things, get things prepared. And they can talk to the blind people better than anyone else. Philemon related to me that when he talks to a blind person and tells him, you need to love God, then oftentimes he'll get an answer, well, why should I, when he made me this way? But if a blind person said the same thing, then obviously it's a little more difficult for them to make that comment. So really, they're more receptive to hearing the gospel from another blind person than they are a sighted person. But the work is going very well. Many people are converted on a monthly basis from these meetings. Of course, they usually have a sighted person traveling with them, and they form a little train, as you can see there, maybe six or seven different people. And so you'll be surprised how well they can get along, actually. But it really makes you feel for people who cannot able to see. The Voice of Truth, of course, is a very important part of our work. We do have several copies of the Voice of Truth on the table at the very back here, along with some CDs, music CDs, gospel singing. Those CDs were given to us, and so we are able to give them to you as well. So pick up a copy of the Voice of Truth and the CD on the way out tonight. But we print the Voice of Truth in India, Nigeria, and in Ghana. It's shipped from India back over here. And then to give you a couple of stories to kind of illustrate how well the Voice of Truth is received in the various countries. We've been printing it in Nigeria for the last 3 or 4 years. We started out printing 3,000 copies. Now we're up to 6,000 copies. And they're always, can't hardly wait for the next issue. They're getting an email to us, when's the next issue coming out? In Ghana, we've just started printing it maybe last year when we started. We started 3,000 copies. We just got an email at the first of this year. We need 5,000 copies. There's also a man in Mexico that had a copy of the Spanish version of The Voice of Truth. Church in Tupelo, Mississippi has a work there. Many of them go down there every year. So they went down to the first of this year, saw the man with his Voice of Truth, and he had wrapped his copy of The Voice of Truth in newspaper. Now, you do that because you consider it to be very precious, and you want to protect it. And so all this kind of illustrates, I think, how well it's received in various countries. In most countries of the world, there is no literature of any kind whatsoever. And they are begging for any type of literature. They love The Voice of Truth. It's fairly easy to understand. It also has teaching on a variety of different topics. And when you don't have anything, then the different topics is certainly a great deal of help to them. And so they really love The Voice of Truth. And so we're glad to help them out. But also we want to keep in mind that it takes more than just one thing to usually evangelize a person. For instance, the young lady here, she was converted about a year ago. She told her story to Paula. And her story of conversion started with her classmate. They were in law school. Classmate simply asked her one day, "Do you believe in God?" And her answer was, "Well, no." Now, she was a Hindu. She went to the Hindu temples and did all the rituals and everything like she's supposed to. But she really wasn't getting anything out of it. She didn't really believe it. She was just doing it because that's what she's supposed to. Anyway, he began to talk to her, gave her some literature like The Voice of Truth. She also gave high praise to the older preacher there beside in the other picture for his patience in continuing to teach her. And so in conversion, this one woman, you see about three different avenues. You have the personal evangelism efforts by just a classmate. Then you have the literature coming in, and then you have the teaching from an older, experienced Christian, and that's generally the way it is. When a person is converted, it's not because of just one thing. It's a combination of several things. And that's what one thing we try to do in the world evangelism is have what we call a complete evangelism program, where we have a lot of TV and radio, mass evangelism tools. We have the books and other teaching tools that go along with that. And, of course, then we make personal visits to make sure it's all being distributed and used correctly, as well as teaching them ourselves where they can be further grounded, where they can continue to do the further teaching and the follow-up on all the other contacts and so forth. And by doing that, of course, then hundreds of people are truly converted every year. This is a new issue for The Voice of Truth. It's a new language. It's in the Marathi language. This is the state where Bombay is located. Large city, of course, many churches in that city and in that whole state. We just started doing that. This is the second issue that he's holding up there. And so hopefully that'll be a great help to the church in that particular state. But India is, again, one of those countries in which things are, politically speaking, is not going too well. There's a very pro-Hindu party in power in government. They're passing a lot of laws and restrictions concerning Christianity. We received this about the first of this year. And notice what it says. No Christianity, no Bible, either convert or else leave our state. And it says we'll erase Christianity by 2021. Now, I don't near believe they're going to be able to do that. But nevertheless, that's their goal. And they can certainly place a lot of obstacles in the way. And we can see that already. It's getting harder and harder to get funds over there to fund the TV and radio, the printing and other things. They're canceling and denying a lot of visa requests, sometimes even denying entrance to those people who have visas. And so who knows, we might not be able to go back again. When next time we try to go, which could be about the 1st of September, we might get over there and then they say, nope, you're going to be, turn around and go back home. We've heard of that happening. So you never really know. Hopefully it won't, of course, but you never know. Our visa runs, a 10-year visa, our visa runs out next year, so that's not real good either. So we're kind of concerned about whether we'll even get another visa or not. But this year, I mean, our last trip, we did take one day off to go see the Taj Mahal, first time we've ever seen in 10 years. Very beautiful structure, about 400 years old. So it's amazing what people can do when they have the time and the money to do that, of course. But there are many Hindu temples there in India, of course. And there's a typical one there. You see many statues representing different gods and all the colors and so forth. But this man was converted primarily by the radio program. He was listening to the radio program about 3 years before he finally called in. So he was converted. He has a building he donated to the church for the church to meet in. And he lives in the city of Chennai. Now, Chennai is a very large city. Many churches in that city. However, in his particular part of the city, as far as we know, there is no church. And so the church has started there in his building. He also has a blackboard that he puts on the street where everybody can read a verse of scripture every day. So every day he'll write a new verse of scripture there. And his area is completely either Muslim or Hindu, people who generally will not be too kindly to reading scripture usually, but he has the courage to do that anyway. So he has the courage of continuing doing what he knows he needs to be doing. But Hinduism is all around him, of course. Right through that door is where the church meets, and just two or three doors down is the Hindu temple. And so it is all around them. On many of the hills, you will see temples at the top of it. Very similar to what you read in the Old Testament, where you find that they built idolatrous temples on the high places. Well, that's exactly what they're doing there in India. But all of our people also act as delivery points for literature and tracts and so forth. They do quite a bit of translating of various books and literature. This is one such seminar for TV and radio speakers. And of course, before it starts, you can see the table of the literature ready to be distributed there. In India, though, they operate what they themselves called Indian Standard Time, which basically means nothing starts on time. So when you get to a place and it's time to start, there won't be nobody there. For example, here, this is about 5 or 10 minutes before it's scheduled time to start. And as you can see, there is absolutely nobody there. You would think, well, this is a waste of time. We know where nobody's here. Well, about 30 minutes after this, you see people coming in. They're starting to sing there. And then about 30 minutes after that, when I'm partly way through my lesson, then you've got a pretty good crowd there. I think a few more came in even after this. But when it's all over with, of course, you got to eat. And, of course, there's a picture of them eating. All the rice and with curry topping on top of the rice, all that's eaten with by hand. And they'll ball it all up in a little hand and put it in their mouth. And they're very neat at it. I mean, they can don't hardly waste a grain of it. Paul and I don't do nearly as well doing it that way. But this is Arjuna right there in the center. He has started a part-time Bible school that we help support. He's working, him and about three or four other experienced preachers, working about 20 different students throughout the state, about three nights a week, as well on Saturdays and Sundays. The good part is it's pretty cheap to run a school like this, and of course, they do not have to quit their job in order to get further Bible training, which is very good, of course. So they're working, like I said, 20 students or so. 8 people completed their course of study, so they received a little certificate there. There's many people in India that do at least understand some degree of English, but nowhere near enough that you can just speak English. So everywhere we go, we have to have a translator. This is one of the men doing the translating for me here. But they really know how to make you feel welcome. This is a congregation we went to one night out in a rural village. And you see the 5 young ladies are kind of welcoming us with some flowers. This is the church building itself, got a thatched roof and everything. But not too long after this picture was made, the electricity went off, and that's fairly common. Electricity is not real dependable there in India. Sometimes it's off a few minutes, 15, 20 minutes. Sometimes it's off a few hours. Unfortunately, this time it only stayed off a few minutes, and it came back on because it was pretty dark in there without the lights, as you might imagine. But this is what the building looks like on the outside there. Paul, of course, goes with me usually to India, and she'll teach several children's and ladies' classes. Sometimes it might be a fairly large group, such as this women's class in the rented hall. Sometimes it might be a group outside. And sometimes it's in a very small room and very hot and stuffy. This was a very small room, no ventilation whatsoever when you shut the door. And you had to shut the door because I was teaching on the other side. And so she complained that she always gets the worst end of the deal. And so y'all need to feel sorry for me. I get to hear her complain all the time. But she had a right to. It got pretty hot in there, I have to admit, after a couple of hours. It got pretty hot and stuffy in there. I was glad I was where I was. But sometimes it's a very large group. This is a very large group we had last fall there in the city of Chennai again. We're also working with two full-time schools of preaching there in India. One is the Vizag Valley College right on the very coast of India. This is associated with Bear Valley. And so this is John Dean and Father Samuel Raju, the directors of the school. And this is one of the best schools I know of anywhere. They do a great job of running and training the people there in this school. They also have a master's level program here. So I was there for 2 weeks teaching in a master's level program. They'll come in for 2 weeks twice a year. And then, of course, into 3 years, then they would have the master's degree. And so that's a good group that I had here. While I was here at this place, that the intelligence officer came by twice and checked on me, supposedly make sure I was safe, but the questions he was never did talk to me, and the question he was asking did not indicate he was there just to make sure I was safe. So like I said, that's one of the reasons why we're not sure we're going to be able to go back again, because they did do some checking up on me while I was there this time, so who knows what might happen next time. There's no way to know. You just have to go. That's the only way to know for sure. But they also had a graduation this time. This is the fourth graduation class of this school. I think this is a total of 52 graduates altogether. All of them are still faithful. Here, each one of them received a free bicycle as well as a portable amplifier system and a lantern. And that was a great gift to them, helped them in their work there. Of course, you will see a lot of cows walking up and down the streets, and they can literally lay down wherever they want to. So there, a cow right across the street from the school building, and looks like she's kind of waiting for the doctor's clinic to open up, but I don't really think that's what she's doing there. But this shows what the school did in 2016. Again, you see the large number of Bible classes and meetings and seminars held. You had 350 baptisms, so just last year. And so this is while they're in school. You can imagine then what good they do when they go out and work the next 10, 20, 30 years, whatever. So all the good then that's ultimately traced back to the school is almost unimaginable. So again, I think this is one of the best ways to evangelize any nation when you train future leaders of the church in their own language and, of course, in their own culture. The other school we're working with is way up there in the northern part of India, the North India Bible College. We at World Evangelism are financially sponsoring this school. We're short of funds, really, for this school, but we've got enough to kind of keep it going, at least. But this is Ernest Gill. He's the director of the school. This is one of the teachers of the school right there in the center. He actually lives in the city of Amritsar, which is about 8 hours or so by train from where the school is located. But he travels down there every week, teach for a couple of days in the school, then go back. Our plans is this fall to make it up there to his place. We've never been there before. Had a lot of invitation, but never could to get the time to get up there. But we're just going to take the time this time to go up there and have a couple of days meeting. So we're looking forward to seeing that place there. He also has a graduation every February. There's usually around 5 or 6 graduating, a few more than that this time. But in conjunction with the lectureship is a two-day lectureship. Where people all over North India will come. And it's a great source of encouragement to them because the church in North India is not nearly as numerous as in South India, and they need encouragement. We're also working with what's called the Grace JC School of Evangelism, which is not a preacher training school at all, but it's a program to train individual Christians, both men and women, to be better soul winners, to pass out tracts, have Bible studies, whatever can be done. It's an 18-month program. They'll usually meet about 1 weekend a month. And wherever it's been held at, I mean, it's had great results. They literally pass out thousands of tracts. You see what this group did in 18 months. Held literally thousands of tracts in 2 different languages that's been passed out. You see the large number of baptisms, and a few more are baptized immediately after the school ended. That's not recorded here. But they don't quit. Once they get started doing it, they don't quit. For instance, this group here at the first of this year asked for 1,000 Bible correspondence courses. I wonder how long it take this group to pass out 1,000 Bible correspondence courses. Take a long, long time, if ever, for most places. And so again, that just shows the dedication they have. It also illustrates that even though the church is growing in India, that doesn't mean our needs decrease. In one way, they actually increase because you have more and more people working harder and harder, but they still don't have the funds to fund the printing and the TV and things like that. But you have more people using those things. And so they can kind of keep up with their own church need, but that's about it. And so our needs continue to increase, and we appreciate your help and whatever you can do on that. This also showed the long-term effect of the School of Evangelism. The young man there graduated from one school 3 or 4 years ago. He was so touched by what he learned there that he quit his job, went to a school of preaching. Back in this spring, he just graduated from that school. His wife, they've been married maybe a year or so now. She's the daughter of Philemon, one of our co-workers. And they just recently moved to a large city of Bangalore. It's in another state where many people there don't understand their language. But they're beginning work with a brand new congregation. Right now, that congregation consists of one couple other than themselves. So they certainly have a lot of work ahead of them. So keep them in your prayers as you think about them and their new work in that new congregation there. But that ends my presentation for tonight. Again, we certainly appreciate your help and support of our work. If you have any questions at the end, feel free to ask us when we're closed here. And if you'd like a copy of our newsletter, some of you got it on the way in. But if you did not get one, be sure we'll be glad, more than happy to give it to you at the end there. If you're not receiving it and would like to receive it either by mail or email, then let Paula know your address and we'll be happy to send it to you. For a few moments tonight before we do dismiss, I want to bring your attention to just a few verses in Acts chapter 10. Acts chapter 10 and 11, of course, are a familiar verse, I'm sure, to most of you. It's the conversion of Cornelius, the first Gentile. Cornelius was a very good man, morally speaking. For instance, in verse 2, he's described to us as a devout man, one who feared God with all his household. That shows he had a good reputation among his family, even among his friends. He gave alms generously to the people. He was a very giving man, even to the Jews. Not too many Gentiles had much respect for Jews, but he did. It also said he prayed to God always, and his prayers went up before God as a memorial to God. Then in verse 22 of the same chapter, he's also described as a just man. The word just means fair and honest. He was a very honest man in a very dishonest and immoral world. We sometimes think our world today is very immoral, and it is. But I doubt compared to the first century, it has anything on that. If anything, we're probably better off than the first century world. It was a very unjust, very violent, very immoral world, the first century. And yet in that world, we find Cornelius, who described as a just man. One, again, one who fears God. Then he said he had a good reputation among all the nation of the Jews. You know, to me, that last characteristic said more about him than anything else. Because generally speaking, the Jew would absolutely hate and despise the Roman army. Because they hated the Roman Empire. Because that was the tyranny that they were suffering under. The Roman army was simply the symbol of the Roman tyranny and oppression they were suffering under the Roman Empire. They were often taken advantage of by Roman soldiers. So generally speaking, they would absolutely hate the Roman soldiers. But not Cornelius. They loved him. They had great respect for him. But in spite of all the good characteristics that Cornelius had, there was one thing that wiped away all the good characteristics, and that is he was outside of Christ. He was lost. You see, so many people in the world today has the idea that as long as we're good people, then certainly God is going to save us. Or as long as I'm sincere, as long as I'm just sincere, whatever belief I have, whatever church I'm go to, or whatever religion I go to even, as long as I'm sincere in it, then certainly God is going to be pleased with me. Well, if that was the case, then Cornelius would have been saved long before Peter ever got there, because you would not find a better person than Cornelius. Morally speaking, he was as good as any one of us here tonight, maybe better than many of us. But it doesn't matter how good we may be. It doesn't matter how sincere we may be. Outside of Christ, we're all lost. Cornelius is a great example of a good religious man, but one who is lost. We need to realize that outside of Christ, we're lost. And it includes you and I. We're not going to make it to heaven because I'm a good person. Now, hopefully we are good people, but that's not why I'm going to go to heaven. I'm going to go to heaven because of my relationship with Jesus Christ. We need to realize that and preach that message to other people, that we're not going to make it to heaven because of our own efforts, because of any good works that I may do, or how sincere I may be. Outside of Christ, we're lost. What about you tonight? You may have, you know, really doesn't matter in one way how many times you go to church or how many times you pray or read the Bible. I've known of people who would go to church for years, attend church, and listen to gospel sermon after gospel sermon, but never obey. I don't know why they wouldn't, but they wouldn't. Well, it doesn't matter how many times you may go to church. If you don't put it into practice, it's worth nothing. Tonight, then, you may be one of those who've come to church on a regular basis for a long time, but never really obeyed what you hear. If you don't obey what the Bible says, then we have no hope of salvation. Tonight, I hope and pray that you will come to Christ if you need to, or maybe you need to rededicate your life in some way. If you need to do that tonight, if you're subject to invitation, won't you come while we stand and sing?